गाय गोपी जनवादा भिरीवार धारी यशोधनन्दना ब्रज जनरञ्जना यशोधनन्दना ब्रज जनरञ्जना यशोधनन्दना ब्रज जनरञ्जना यमुनतीरवनचारी यमुनतीरवनचारि जय राधा माधव कुञ्ज बिहारि जय राधा माधव कुञ्ज बिहारि हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय किशोर किशोरी जय किशोर किशोरी जय किशोर किशोरी जय किशोर किशोरी गौरनिताय जय गौरनिताय गौरनिताय जय गौरनिताय जय जगन्नाथ जय जगन्नाथ जय बलदेव जय सुभद्रा जय प्रभुपद 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 श्रील प्रभुपद गुरुदेव 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 जय जय गुरुदेव जय जय गुरुदेव 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 जय जय Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Ashtotadashata Shri Shriman His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Shri Shri Kishore Kishore Ki Jai Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai Shri Shri Gauranitai Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Vaishnav Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai Good morning, Mother Krishna Archana. I'm glad you showed up. I thought maybe it's going to be one of those preaching to the four walls classes Prabhupada spoke so much about. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam namaskritya naram jaiva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayam mudirayat Nashtaprayeshu Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki Krishne Swadhamo Bhagavate Dharma Gyana Divisaha Kalavanashta Drisham Esha Puranarko Dunodita Sadasevya Srimad Bhagavati Kata Yasya Shravana Matrena Harishchitam Samashayet Paramananda Pataya Premavashakshrayate Sarvada Sarvasevyaya Shri Krishnaya Namostume. So, let's see. We are continuing the chapter entitled The Brahmin's Wives Blessed, and we're reading texts 27 and 28 today. Prana buddhi manaswatma dharapatya dhanadhaya yat samparkat priya asams tatakonvapara priya prana buddhi manaswatma dharapatya dhanadhaya yat samparkat priya asams tatakonva parapriya. Please chant. Pranabuddhi manaswatma dwarapatya dhanadaya yat samparkat priya asams tatakon vapara priya. Prana buddhi manaswatma in the word for word, prana, one's vital force, buddhi, intelligence, manaha, mind, swa, relatives, atma, body, dhara, wife, apatya, children, dhana, wealth, adayaha, and so forth, yat, with which, self, samparkat, because of contact, priyaha, dear, asan, have become, tata, then that, kaha, what, new, indeed, aparaha, other, priyaha, dear object. In the translation, it is only by contact with the self that one's vital breath, intelligence, mind, friends, body, wife, children, wealth, and so on are dear. Therefore, what object can possibly be more dear than one's own self? In the purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. The word yat samparkat in this verse refers to contact with the individual self and ultimately with the Supreme Self, the Lord, who is the origin of the individual living being. By developing Krishna consciousness, one automatically becomes self-realized, and thus one's vital strength, intelligence, mind, relatives, body, family, and wealth all become enhanced and brilliant by the central influence of Krishna consciousness. This happens because Krishna consciousness is the optimum, efficient conjunction of the individual self. who is pure consciousness with the supreme self and supreme consciousness, Krishna. And I'll just read verse 28. Tadyata devaya janam patayo vo dujataya swasatram parayishyanti yushmabir grihame dinaha. You should thus return to the sacrificial arena, because your husbands, the learned brahmanas, are householders and need your assistance to finish their respective sacrifices. Om Agyanati Minandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gunave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Longa Yate Girim Yat Kripam Tamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Shri Chaitanya Manob Hishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namni Gaura Tushe Namaha. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namaom Vishnupadaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyadi Shatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I'll just read back the translations. Actually, I just want to recap, and then I'll read the translations, just to give some context. So, Krishna sent the boys to beg, and sent them to see the brahmanas, and asked them, please, go and beg some food. You all have said that you're hungry. So, these brahmanas, they're performing sacrifice. They certainly will have some things to offer in the sacrifice, and they'll spare something for you. So the boys went and they asked, and the brahmanas didn't even look at them. They didn't respond. They completely ignored them. And societally speaking, it's kind of okay, because they're just some cowherd boys, and the brahmanas were performing the pinnacle of what society is geared towards in the Varnashram system. They were performing sacrifice. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you take this yajna. He says that in the beginning of creation, that he gave yajna to mankind and said, be thou happy by this sacrifice, as Prabhupada has translated it, because this sacrifice will bring, it'll make you happy, it'll make the demigods happy, and in that, in doing that, you'll have mutual happiness and everything will go well. So these brahmanas, they were performing what they understood to be the topmost echelon of societal perfection. And so they ignored these cowherd boys when they came to ask, because they were absorbed in something that was much more important for them. So the cowherd boys went back to Krishna, and they said, they didn't even look at us. And they were a bit depressed, because they were thinking Krishna and Balaram were hungry. And so they're thinking, we weren't able to get anything for Krishna and Balaram. They must be hungry, we've been playing all day. And so Krishna then smiled and said, don't worry. Sometimes beggars are rejected. This is the way of the world. These are the ways of men. Go and see those brahmanas' wives. They're actually so devoted to me that if you just take my name, you don't even have to say I'm hungry. Because if you tell them I'm hungry, then you may see that they become extremely disturbed because they're my devotees. You just say that I'm here. You just say that I've come. And they will bring everything that they have. They will immediately drop whatever they're doing and they'll come. And so the cowherd boys, they went to the Brahmin's wives and they said, Krishna and Balaram have arrived. We've been going around Vraj and now we're here. They're just in the forest outside of your house, nearby. And you should go see them. And then the cowherd boys, even though Krishna said, don't tell them, they said, they're hungry. Do you have anything? Do you have anything to feed them? And so the Brahmana's wives, they dropped everything and they ran. Their families tried to stop them, their brothers, their sisters, their husbands, their mothers, their fathers. They all tried to, what are you doing? You can't leave. What are you, you're taking the food that's meant for the yajna. What are you doing? They tried to stop them. And so it was to no avail. They weren't able to stop them. So the Brahmana's wives, they showed up and they saw Krishna. And they were blown away. It was the most intense thing that they'd experienced to that point in their life. One can only imagine, or we're not even encouraged to imagine these things, but somehow or other we read them, so we have to contemplate them. What it must be like to see Krishna for the first time. This was what the Brahmin ladies, the wives of the Brahmanas, they went through. They experienced this and they saw Krishna in his full beauty. And as Mother Krishnarchana, as you explained to us the other day, there was this beautiful exchange, this nonverbal exchange that went on. Krishna was holding a lotus flower and he was twirling the lotus flower as if to twirl the ladies' hearts, or as if to say, I'm captured by your love and you're twirling me. And Sanatana Goswami was giving he's always giving possibilities. He's always saying, it could be like this, or the lotus flower could mean this, or it could mean this, giving so many angles of vision and perspectives that we can see from the pastime. So the very essence of their existence was fulfilled by this meeting. And in that, because it was quite a fleeting experience, I mean, they just met very quickly, all the cowherd boys were there. Krishna speaks these verses. So I'll just read back the two translations here. It is only by contact with the self that one's vital breath, intelligence, mind, friends, body, wife, children, wealth, and so on are dear. Therefore, what object can possibly be more dear than one's own self? You should thus return to the sacrificial arena, because your husbands, the learned brahmanas, are householders and need your assistance to finish their respective sacrifices. So we can only imagine how devastating this must have been for the wives of the brahmanas. Because here they are, they're on the precipice of the highest, most wonderful thing in all of existence. They're seeing Krishna. Every sadhaka in the universe is chanting, reading, praying, oh Krishna, please give me your darshan, let me see Krishna. Ultimately, that's why we start this path. I want to see Krishna. I want to see God. I want to know the absolute truth. And here they are, and they've seen the absolute truth. They're seeing the absolute truth. He's playing with them. He's twirling this lotus flower. Everything is there. And what does he say? 5 minutes, 10 minutes in, okay, you can go home now. Goodbye. He says, please leave. Go back to where you came from. This must be devastating. It must be devastating for these ladies. And also, it brings a philosophical question. How? How is it that Krishna could send them back? It doesn't really make sense if we look at it from the outside. Because we hear from many places that Krishna is completely controlled by the love of his devotees. He's controlled by prema. As one of the pastimes that our Jai Baladev, that you really like to quote, this interaction between Ambarish Maharaj and Durvasa Muni. The reason that Durvasamuni was not able to be forgiven for his offense by Vishnu when he went to Vishnu, because he knew the tattva, he knew the Siddhanta, or so he thought. And he went and he said, "Your holy name can save anyone from hell. Your holy name is the most glorious thing. You yourself, you are the ultimate purifying object. You can do anything. You please save me. I'm being licked by the flames of your chakra. It's chasing me through all the universes. It's chasing me around the universe. You please help me. Please help me, Lord." And Lord Vishnu smiles. And he says this verse. He says, what's the first line? My brain isn't working today. Aham pakta paradino yasvatantra iva dvija sadubhya grasta hridaya bhaktar bhakta janapriya. He says, Durvasamuni, aham pakta paradino, I am completely controlled by my devotees. Yasvatantra iva dvija. Actually, O Brahmana, I'm not in control of my own self. I don't have any jurisdiction over what I do. The Vedas glorify me as Swatantra, as self-controlled, but I'm Aswatantra. When it comes to my devotees, you have to know this higher tattva. My devotees have complete control over me. Indeed, Sadubhya Grasta Hridayo, they have captured me in their hearts. I can't go anywhere. I can't do anything if my devotee doesn't want me to do it. Bhaktar Bhakta Janapriya, you should worship my devotee. Because actually, what to speak of my devotees being dear to me? Those who worship my devotees are dear to me. Elsewhere, in the Adi Purana, Krishna tells Arjuna, actually those who worship me, they're not my devotees. Those who worship my devotees are my devotees. If you worship me, you may get something, and I'll give you something. He says in the fifth canto, Muktim Dadati Karichit Smana Bhakti Yoga. I give mukti, I give bhukti, I give, you know, you can have enjoyment, you can even have liberation, but I don't give bhakti. Krishna doesn't give bhakti to those who worship him. He gives bhakti through his devotees. And so the point that I'm underlying here is that Krishna doesn't move without his devotees. The second verse of the Bhagavatam tells us, Sadhyo Hridya Virudite Chakritibi Shru Shru Shubhis Tachanat, that Krishna's captured. Hrit Avarudyate, in the heart, he's completely captured by the love of his devotees, particularly those who are expert, those who are deep. They have prema, our acharyas explain. He's captured in their heart completely. He can't move. Bilva Mangal Thakur has also told us so many poetic things about this, how he's taunting Krishna. He's saying, you escaped me, you may have left my hand, but you try to get out of my heart. You can't get out of my heart. So it begs the question, how is Krishna able to say, please go home now to these Brahmins' wives? We're hearing the explanation. They have prema. They've left everything. They're on the precipice or the doorstep of the love of the gopis. Even they say the same words we're going to hear. They use the same words that the gopis use after he says, please go home. So how is it that he can just so easily say, please go away? Because this is Vrindavan. This isn't Vishnu. Vishnu was speaking to Durvasamuni, and he was saying, I can't do anything unless my devotees tell me I can do it, basically. You know, Vishnu is saying, Vasudev Krishna is telling Arjuna this, that if you worship my devotees, I can't do anything. He says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Konteya pratijanihi name bhaktya pranashyati. He says, my devotees, they'll never perish. You should declare this, Arjuna, because if you say it, I have to follow it. Because he can't go against the word of his... Not even that he won't, he can't. That's the way it's set up. He's bound by the Shakti, by his devotees. So how is it that he's able to just dismiss these ladies? Actually, this brings up a very beautiful point for an understanding of what Vrindavan is and for an understanding of how Vrindavan works and what it means that Krishna is not God in Vrindavan. He's ontologically God because he's always God. No one can be the Supreme Person but Krishna. But for all intents and purposes, he's completely relinquished that position. Because that's the only way he can be absorbed in Vrindavan. He can't be absorbed in Vrindavan if he's the controller of Vrindavan, pulling all the puppet strings and making everything happen. And then there's no rasa. The entire point of Vrindavan is for Krishna to be able to exchange rasa with his devotees, which means there must be There must be an even playing field. They must think he's just a beautiful boy, and he must think that he's one of them, and that they're better than him at some times, and he wins, but it's not, I'm God, and you're doing this to serve me. That's Vaikuntha. Ayodhya has less than Vaikuntha, and Dwarka has less than Ayodhya, and Mathura has less than Dwarka. But Vrindavan, it's even. There's nothing there. But how is it that this works? Our acharyas, they explain in this pastime that actually, even though this principle was there, they specifically say that Krishna is dominated by the love of his devotees. Prema means Krishna doesn't have free will anymore. He does what his devotees like. Even though that's there, because the atmosphere of Vrindavan is meant to increase rasa at all times. Because that's the nature of Sat, Chit, and Ananda, of everything being wonderful all the time and being amazing. The nature of that is that there's only one goal, actually, and that's just to increase, just to make the pleasure and the happiness between everyone that's sharing that, particularly everyone in a relationship with Krishna, higher and higher and higher. There can be no other goal, because there's nothing to fight against. There are no problems. Everything's in perfect harmony. So it's just, let's make it better. Let's make it better. And that's what they do into infinity. And so in order to accomplish this, because again, Krishna can't do it himself. Because if he did it himself, and if he was pulling all the strings, he wouldn't be able to be in it. He wouldn't be able to be enjoying it. So he employs his shaktis, particularly in this case, his lila shakti, to make those decisions for him, to make those calls for him. So his lila shakti, even though normally he's completely controlled by prema, she bestowed some knowledge of his opulence to him so that he would act in this position and say, anyway, you can go home. The Paramatma is situated in your heart, and your husbands, they're performing yajna, and they're going to please the Paramatma through yajna. So I'll also be pleased by doing that. You're here to worship me, I know that. So that's why he spoke like this. We'll also hear when we come to the Rasa Panchajaya, the beginning of it, when the gopis go to meet Krishna. Again, the Brahmin's wives, they take some of the same words because they're in a very similar situation. The situations play out completely differently because the gopis don't go home, because that's not what's going to facilitate the rasa at that particular point. But this Aishwarya allows Krishna to say like this and to send them home and to speak this Brahma Gyan. Oh, the Paramatma is in your heart and I'm the Paramatma, so you should leave. You can go. You can go. Because this is what will facilitate their love deepening. The Brahmin's wife's love will come up and up and up and up by that separation. And the Leela Shakti, because she's a servant. Yogamaya is a servant. His Leela Shakti is a servant. His Icha Shakti is a servant. We hear in all of these pastimes in Vrindavan, we hear in the commentaries, our acharyas, they've so mercifully given us glimpses into how this works so that we can understand the mechanics of it and so that we can delve into it. All of these Shaktis, at different points in the Brahma Vimohan Leela, the Icha Shakti understood that Krishna had some affection for Lord Brahma, and so went and got Lord Brahma and brought him so that the whole pastime could take place. And we hear these different Shaktis, they do so many different things in relation to the Vrindavan pastimes. So the Leela Shakti here, she decided, this is what will be perfect to bring this up. If Krishna meets and does whatever with these Brahmin ladies now, it's not going to have the best result that it possibly could. It's not going to be the perfect culmination of Krishna's experience or the perfect culmination of the Brahmin's wife's experience. So she gave that little bit of knowledge of Aishwarya to Krishna so he could speak like that and cause such a pain to these ladies' hearts. Again, maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes. I mean, we're not given the time frame, but looking at the pastime, they don't spend very long together. It's not, they don't go for a walk through the forest. They don't do anything. Actually, one of our acharyas, they say that Krishna maybe from his perspective spoke like this because he felt a little embarrassed that all of his friends were there, and these were Brahmins' wives, and he didn't want to say anything too, you know, out of the ordinary. And so it's a very fleeting experience. It's the fulfillment of their life to that point. And then he says, you can go home. You go. And so, this brings me to the next point, that because the Lila Shakti and all of Krishna's Shaktis and the entire atmosphere of Vrindavan's desire is to facilitate the love of Krishna between his devotees, is to facilitate the ever-increasing ocean of rasa, the churning of that ocean, making the waves bigger and bigger and bigger. Because that's the case, we get a glimpse of how that works, and we get a glimpse of how that's going to work for sadhakas also. We get a glimpse for how that's not only in play for perfect devotees, but it's also in play for everyone who's walking on the path of bhakti. This churning that is going on, especially when one traverses their way into what we could call as spiritual life that's based on positive impetuses. Prabhupada said at one point, and forgive me, I couldn't find the reference, so maybe it's not a Prabhupada said, but I distinctly remember hearing that Prabhupada said this, that at one point, in the beginning, one is running away from Maya. But at a certain point in the sadhaka's life, one starts to run towards Krishna. So we get a bit of a dichotomy. As Krishna has explained in the Bhagavad Gita, there are four types of people that generally take his shelter. There's the artarti, the jigyasu, and the jnani. So the arti and the artarti, one who is distressed, one who wants money, the jigyasu, one who's a little curious, and the jnani is one who actually knows. The first two, they're considered quite inferior because usually once their desires are fulfilled, they lose a little bit of enthusiasm because their faith is based on negative impetus. It's based on running away from something else. It's based on fleeing from, as Durvasa Muni was running away, from the flames of the chakra licking him in the back. It's based on that, but once it goes away, maybe we just, okay, now things are okay. There's no real positive impetus. So in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Shikshashtakam, he's explained to us what the transition into the positive impetus looks like. And also, he's given a very, very detailed breakdown of what spirituality coming from a positive impetus is. Because that's the place where this stuff starts to take place. Where what we hear in the 10th canto, where what we hear with all the bhaktas, because these are the things that we're supposed to understand, because ideally, these are the things that are coming, whether it's going to be 5 years or 50 years, or five lifetimes, or 5 minutes, whatever it's going to be, these are the things that we're supposed to be earnestly hoping are going to come. This is why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke those verses. This is why Rupa Goswami wrote the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This is why Shukadev Goswami spoke to Parikshit Maharaj, the Bhagavatam, so that he could develop this mental conception in a very short time and understand this is the goal of my life. And so I just want to go over the Shikshashtakam in relation to this, in relation to this process that happens, because I was reminded of it by seeing this and by hearing the words of our acharyas in commenting on Krishna's plunging these ladies into separation. It's described that when they saw Krishna, their meditation became so intense because they couldn't just go and hug him, that they closed their eyes and they fell into a deep, rapt meditation, and he was there and they served him. And so they had this wonderful experience they never had before that was most tangible because they finally had darshan. They'd never seen Krishna before this. They'd only heard about him. And then it's over. Now you go. You have to leave. And they left. So we can only imagine the deep, deep, deep separation that they're feeling. And so this is described in the Shikshashtakam by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the first three verses of the Shikshashtakam are what we could title again as negative-based or negative impetus spirituality. The beginning, the very first verse, it doesn't seem so negative, but it lays out a general overview of what Sankirtan does. And for the people in the consciousness of just coming in contact, they can't help but have most of their spiritual life based on negative impetus. Because of a lack of knowledge, you're generally running away from what you've experienced. Unless you're a jnani, which there are very few of, and they're only growing to be fewer and fewer and fewer in Kali Yuga, because jnani classically means I studied the Vedas, and through Vedic conclusion I understand Krishna is God, and that I should surrender to Him. So, I personally have never met anyone like that. Maybe in India, you find that here and there. Generally, even in India, it's pretty rare. You usually just find people that say, oh yes, I am knowing Krishna and I love Krishna and He is Bhagavan, but they don't really know. They have no idea. If somebody comes along with a little more logic and a better opinion, they can easily also say, yes, Krishna is the same as Shiva, and there ultimately everyone is Bhagavan and I'm also Bhagavan. You get these kind of mixes. So jnanis are very rare. Generally, we see this negative impetus spirituality in the beginning because we can't help but run away from the suffering that's out there. It's getting worse and worse and worse. So the Shikshastakam, the first verse, lays out all of the benefits just to help somebody see that this will be much better than that. You're experiencing that. You're experiencing depression and suffering and sadness and everything is falling apart. Well, look at this. It's going to be an ocean that's ever increasing, and at every step it's going to be nectar, and it's going to completely clean the soul, and it's going to clean your heart, and the lotus of your heart will bloom in the moonlight of Sankirtan. For somebody who just begins, that sounds really wonderful, but I don't know what it means. You know, it's very compelling though. And then the second verse, it's abjectly miserable. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, oh, even though all of the things that you just said about the chanting of the holy name, they're supposed to take place, not one of them has happened to me because I'm such an offender. This is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying. He's saying there are no rules, there's no time, you're super merciful. But because I'm an offender, I can't even taste a drop. I can't get anything from that. This is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying. So it's negative impetus spirituality. It's still this lamentation that for somebody on a higher level, it's not a negative impetus thing, but this is describing the progress that a sadhaka has. This verse is likened, the second verse is likened to an archanivritti. And then the third verse, this famous verse that we say every morning here, Trinadapi sunichena turarivasa hishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Still, it's an injunction. It's nishta. It implies that, okay, I understand that if I want to get away from all of that and I want to move towards this person or this concept, really, of Krishna, that I'm slowly beginning to come to some understanding of, then I have to refrain from these things. I have to stop being proud. I have to stop treating other people badly. I have to become humble, I have to become tolerant, I have to give respect, and I have to stop desiring respect. And in this way I'll be able to chant with some attention. I'll be able to make this the goal of my life. So these three verses, they give us negative impetus spirituality. But then, the bulk of the verses, the next five, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives us a very, very wonderful, in-depth breakdown of what it means to walk on the path of positive impetus spirituality. So, in the fourth verse, we hear that this is likened to ruchi. Because after being fixed for some time, one actually gains some experience of what the practice of bhakti actually is. Of, we could say, swarup siddha bhakti. He gains some experience of real bhakti and some taste comes through. He touches ruchi. And so naturally, when you taste something that's very, very wonderful, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, oh, I always lose this verse. It's such a simple verse. Param dushva nivartante. He says, after you taste something higher, then you can give up things that are lower. So once one gets a little drop of ruchi, once one gets some experience, then comes nadanam na janam na sundanam kavitam va jagadisha kamaye. Mama Janmani Janmanishwari Bhavatar Bhakti Rahai Tukitvai. Oh Krishna, the only thing I want, the only thing I want, I don't want wealth, I don't want women, I don't want men if I'm a girl, I don't want to be learned in the scriptures, I don't care for any of these things, I don't want followers, I just want you, and I want to do bhakti all the time. Because one realizes that, wow, this is a really wonderful thing. One gets a little ruchi. Positive impetus spirituality. And so then, in the next verse, because after getting some taste, just like somebody who has any habit, eventually what you have isn't enough. And you want more. And so asakti, which is the next step, is likened to an addiction. Because the classic symptom of somebody who's addicted to something is that what they have is no longer enough and they need more and more and more. And this meets with the frustration of not being able to have more, because Krishna actually organizes it that way. So a sadhaka can long to have him, because this longing is the thing that actually purifies the soul. This longing is the thing that actually removes all of the inebrieties in the heart and helps one to become pure enough to actually move to the higher stages of bhakti. So when one is at asakti, one thinks like this: Oh Krishna, Ai Nanda Tanuja Kinkaram, Oh son of Maharaj Nanda, you please pick me up, make me, it's anything, you give me anything. I have no right to ask you for anything, but please give me the smallest position you possibly can, but give me a position. He says, you make me a speck of dust at your lotus feet. What is a speck of dust? A speck of dust is the smallest thing you can possibly imagine. Brahma prayed to be grass. Uddhava prayed to be a creeper. You make me a speck of dust. The smallest thing the sadhaka can imagine. Just please give me anything. I'm suffering like anything. I really, really want to be with you. This is asakti. This purifying, purifying, purifying thing. And then what happens? In the next verse, Nayanam galada shridharaya vardhanam gadgada vrithayagira pulakar nichitam vapu kada tavanam agrahane bhavishyati. O Lord, when I take your name, tears are not coming from my eyes. Even though they may be, this is the nature of a bhava bhakta. When will tears come from my eyes? When will I feel the ecstasy that I've heard that your devotees are experiencing? Because someone in bhav, actually, that's how it goes. You feel less and less and less. You feel like you're less. You feel, I'm not experiencing more. I asked for something. I asked for the wrong thing. I asked to become a speck of dust. Now I have an actual conception. I want to be a devotee. I want to do this. I want to serve Krishna in this way, and I'm not able to. So this longing, this hankering is there. This is what Krishna is putting the Brahmins' wives through. Obviously, they're already at prema, but even within prema, these things happen. Krishna says, your prema can be better. There are something like 10 stages in prema, and Krishna wants his devotees to climb through each and every one of them, right to the summit, or to the summit that their rasa will allow them to. Some rasas can only go to a particular stage, some rasas can go higher or further. So Krishna is interested in extricating that love from his devotee's heart. So at the stage of bhava, one laments like this, that I asked to be a speck of dust. I asked, but now I'm getting something completely different from what I thought I was asking for. Now, I'm suffering like anything. I'm not getting what I wanted. I'm not getting what I thought I was asking for. And now I'm stuck in this situation. I'm only crying. There's only tears. As our acharyas have explained, it's a very intense, intense experience. And then, at some point in bhava, one transitions into the realm of prema. And at the realm of prema, one sees Krishna. One actually gets sakshat darshan. Krishna's standing in front of them. This is what just happened to the Brahmin's wives. Krishna's there. They were hearing, 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 hearing all of the fruit sellers and the different merchants that go to trade with the people of Gokul, with the people of Raj. They would pass by the Brahmin's wife's house. They would also come to sell wares there. Maybe it must have been a village. And they would say, there's this beautiful boy, and he did this thing, and he did that thing. And so they were completely captivated by this hearing. And they went through these stages, and this desire, I want to see Krishna. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And so finally they saw him. Prema. And then, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he tells us what's going to happen. He says, you're going to see Krishna, and then Krishna's going to go. In this case, Krishna dismissed them, told them that they have to go away. Because what is this cause? This cause is the ultimate impetus, in the ultimate way, very, very protracted suffering that comes through separation, that causes one's love to blossom like anything. It's the hallmark of our sampradaya practically. There are other sampradayas that worship Radha and Krishna. And they're very exalted. If you see the books that they have, if you understand what they're speaking about, the Nimbarka Sampradaya, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decided to take two things from the Nimbarka Sampradaya. One of them is Radha Dasyam, which means I'm a servant of Radharani, and Radharani is my life. And the other one is to follow exclusively in the footsteps of the gopis. So these two things are very, very, very high. Many devotees in our movement, if you tell them that, they'll say, okay, so what's the difference between our sampradaya and their sampradaya? It's the same thing. But the difference between the two sampradayas and the shining gem that the Gaudiya Sampradaya of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to give is an understanding of what separation is, of viraha bhava, and how it plays as the ultimate stimulant for love to increase. Because again, that's the only purpose of the spiritual world. The only purpose in the spiritual world is to increase rasa. And separation happens to be the most effective impetus to increase rasa. This is a very secret thing, because if you don't understand it, then it seems like, why would many others, if you talk to people in other sampradayas, if you talk to the Radha Vallabhis in Vrindavan, they will tell you, what is Rupa Goswami speaking about? Krishna doesn't have to undergo such a painful thing as separation. Radharani, they're never separated. They'll say, their philosophy is Nitya Vihar. The spiritual world is eternal play, and they're never separated. What's the question of this separation? They'll curl their lips at it. They'll say, this is so distasteful what you're speaking about. You're explaining, Radharani has to go through all of these things. His devotees have to go through all of these. The Vrajvasis have to go through this horrible separation. This is what they'll say, because this is the knowledge that they have access to. And what they're saying is true for what they're going to enter into. Because there are many, many different realms. There are many different aspects of Goloka Vrindavan. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has explained that as one does sadhana, there are different places. Even when the Vrajvasis have a desire to experience Brahmaloka, and they have a desire to experience Krishna as God, because they kept hearing some funny things, so they thought, is this true? And they asked Krishna, can you just show us the truth? He took them to this Brahma Hrad, the Brahma Lake in Vrindavan, and they took bath there, and they came out, and they saw Krishna standing there, still in Goloka Vrindavan, but it was a different Goloka Vrindavan. The Vedas were there, they were singing his glories, and the Vrajvasis thought, wow, this is amazing. And then they thought, wait, why is it my heart feels wrong? I'm not able to approach Krishna. I'm not able to go. He's my son, but somehow I'm not able to go to him and pat his head, and I'm not able to be with him. So there are different manifestations of Vrindavan. And depending on the way you worship Krishna, the way you worship Radharani, the way you worship Vrindavan, the Sri Vaishnavas, they also worship Krishna playing a flute. But they're not going to the same place. They're not going to enter into the realm that Rupa Goswami has given. They're not going to enter into that area of Vrindavan, which is our goal. So this separation is very important to understand. It's the hallmark of our philosophy. It's the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which Prabhupada didn't finish the Bhagavatam so he could give to us, which we should really understand the importance of that. He did not finish the Bhagavatam. He didn't write an extensive commentary on the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, because he knew how important it was that we get the distilled essence of Gaudiya philosophy, which comes through the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The Chaitanya Charitamrita and the understanding of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life, particularly that which happens in his later pastimes, is so, so important. And it's literally, it's just a description of Viparalamba Tattva. It's just a description of what it means to be separated from Krishna, and how it's such an important impetus for spiritual life, for both perfected devotees and those who are practicing. It's so important that even Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who was writing the book, when he finished the Adi Lila, he said, "This is taking too long, and I might die. And if I don't give this to the world, if I don't give the Antya Lila, if I don't give the Gaur Gambhira Lila to the world, this whole book is pointless and my life is pointless." So he wrote a summary of it. He wrote something like 400 verses in Bengali to summarize that, just so that at least it would be there. In the same way we saw Srila Prabhupada, he knew that we had to have the 10th canto. And so he finished the second canto and he thought, I'm a 74-year-old man. I may not make it through the Bhagavatam. So I have to write Krishna book because they have to know the 10th canto. They must have the 10th canto. So he gave the 10th canto in summary quickly. He gave Bhakti Rasamrita to Sindhu very quickly. In the same way, he decided at the 5th canto, I have to do Chaitanya Charitamrita must be done. It's very important for us to understand this separation. Now moving back to the Shikshastakam, sorry, I went on a bit of a tangent. Prema. They've seen Krishna and he said, go away. And we've just heard of what an amazing impetus separation is. What's the next verse that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says? Yugayitam nimeshena chakshusha pravrishayitam shunyayitam jagat sarvam govinda virahename. This is the ultimate precursor and stimulant for love. This is the thing that brings everything out. This is the hallmark of our sampradaya. And this is what the Brahmins' wives are going to go through. This is what we're going to hear the gopis go through later. This is what all the Vrajvasis, they all go through when Krishna leaves Vrindavan. And then we go through something like 40 chapters of the Bhagavatam with the Dwarka pastimes, and then we hear about the meeting in Kurukshetra. It's very important to understand all of our Vaishnavacharyas, specifically the Gaudiya Acharyas, are writing elucidations on this principle and how it leads to the highest bliss for Krishna and the Vrajvasis. And we can go further and we can understand what the mechanism is for this particular principle. Because this is actually the nature of real love. It's a little bit, I remember when I read this in a Shikshastakam commentary for the first time, and it actually shook me a little bit. It was a commentary on the final verse, and because to that point in my life and my understanding of the philosophy of Gaudiya Vaishnavism was that we're moving towards happiness, ultimately. That's what we're geared to strive in a selfish way. From the beginning, we're ontologically selfish, as Krishna explained in the chapter preceding the Brahma Vimohan Lila. He explains that people are attached to the self, and so the only way out of selfishness is to become attached to the self of the self. That the only thing that is dear to one is the self. And so, when I was reading this commentary on the 8th verse of the Shikshastakam, I remember seeing something. It was in either Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's commentary on the verse, that one has to be ready to have absolutely nothing, to be completely forlorn, and to be completely rejected, actually. To be completely left aside. Because this is what the last verse says. The last verse says that you can kill me if you want to, marmahata. You can not only kill me, you can kill me in the most painful way. You can cause me the most pain. You can ignore me. You can reject me. What to speak of rejecting me? You can give somebody else the attention that I'm so desperately desiring in front of me, while ignoring me. This is the gist of the final verse of the Shikshastakam. This is what it really means to have a completely self-effacing mood, to really love Krishna, and only to love Krishna. This is what really brings the highest bliss. And then we're stuck. We go back to Yugayatam Nimeshena. We're stuck in this wonderful realm, which we long to be stuck in, but we have to understand it, where the happiness of the world, as we will experience it at that point, no matter how long it is, it's like a millisecond. And any separation, any suffering, is like a yuga, as the verse says. And we get examples of this just to show us what it's going to be like, how intense the experience is going to be. Now, there should be a footnote here that separation is also an intensely amazing experience, which one has to understand through reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, undoubtedly, because that's where it's very much elucidated. Srila Prabhupada has explained it to us. Kaviraj Goswami has explained it to us. Ramananda Roy and Swarup Damodar Goswamis have explained it to us there. Separation is also very, very sweet. But we get some examples of what life is like with this millisecond of pleasure and these yugas of it's so amazing. It takes a minute, it takes a millisecond and turns it into infinity, and takes infinity and turns it into a millisecond. When Krishna was dancing with the gopis in the rasa dance, Krishna's shaktis took an entire night of Lord Brahma, 4.32 billion years, took all the nights from an entire night of Lord Brahma and crammed them into that one night. And it's described that for the gopis, it went by like a millisecond. It ended, and they thought, wait a second, we just started. What do you mean it's over? The sun is coming up. Go back. What is this? It was a millisecond for them. And then it's also described that when they would blink, if I blink, I don't even lose sight of you, Jai Baladev. Literally, if you blink, it's like a flash of black. There's like nothing that... Blah, blah, blah. I can like keep blinking and I can see you. When they would blink, they would curse Lord Brahma because it would cause them so much pain from that momentary separation. Yugayatam nameshena chakshusha pravrishayatam. So we see, we fall into this extraordinary realm where you're so attached, you're so in love, that it's like that. That a millisecond of separation is like a yuga. What to speak of 100 years, like the Vrajvasis went through when Krishna left. There are deeper levels, but we'll keep it there. And 4 billion years of pleasure, of meeting, goes by like a millisecond. So this is what we have to understand. This is what Krishna is churning out, because he wants to give these Brahmin ladies the best experience possible. The next best experience, because it's not even linear. It's not that he wants to give the best experience and then it'll be over. There is no peak. It's all peak. It's all up. This is the only instance that we hear about. But these are eternal devotees. They're going to be eternally. There's going to be more and more and more and more and more. It's going to be more wonderful. So this is what the Bhagavatam is showing us. This is what Shukadev Goswami is telling us. I'll stop there. I went a little about 10 minutes further than I wanted to. I apologize if it was tangential. If there were any faults, please forgive me. And if there was anything nice, know that it's not mine. It's coming from my guru and my guru Janas. Please, if there are any comments or questions or corrections.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class.
Hare Krishna.
Always a wonderful, elucidation of the subject matter. The points that was highlighted to me is you were mentioning Ruchi, our taste for Krishna consciousness. Ruchi, our taste for Krishna consciousness, and how you were basically describing is the difference between, in this related to this verse, the difference between Vapu and Vani. Wives of the Brahmanas wanted the Vapu, association of Krishna. But Krishna says, it's better to follow my Vani, my instructions. And we see Prabhupada says that. So one thing that came to mind is that we see that when Prabhupada was on the planet, they had the devotees had his Vapu. And when he left the planet, we see that there's so many problems that took place because, it was harder to, follow the Vani, the instructions. And so we see regarding Ruchi, one thing, maybe I'll share something with you, somebody that's a source of inspiration for you is my brother. One thing I appreciate it. But before that, one thing I came in mind is that we see that when Prabhupada was sharing his teachings that, you know, it's better to follow the Vani than the Vapu, we see that Ruchi is created when we surround ourselves with devotees. But Ruchi is maintained when we surround ourselves with devotion. And the Bhagavatam describes what that is. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarva gunais tatra samasite suraha. Prabhupada mentions in that purport, this is from the 5th canto, chapter 18, verse 12. He describes what we surround ourselves with. We shouldn't surround ourselves with people, because surrounding ourselves with people is outside of control. What does he say? We surround ourselves with principles, the 26 qualities of devotee, because that's inside our control. Chanakya Panita, he says a good quote. He says, truth is my mother. Realized knowledge is my father. Compassion is my brother. And forgiveness is my son. These are my kinsmen. And so we see that. So I'll just mention one story, since my brother is an inspiration for you, and I'll share why he's one of my greatest inspirations in Christian consciousness regarding this point. So this long story, my brother was, there's, throughout the, you, obviously, you know, since you live in a temple, you know that sometimes it's flourish, it goes up and down with association, especially Bhagavatam class. So one day my brother was given a Gita class, and for whatever reason, none of the devotees were there. And so nobody was there, literally. And he was getting a Gita class, expressing just as much Ruchi as if tons of people were there. So when somebody walked in while he was giving Gita class, the person looked completely confused and bewildered. He was looking around and says, who is he talking to? And so that's one of why I appreciated my brother so much, because he showed what he was made of. Anyone can show what they're made of when everyone is watching. But the reason my brother is such an inspiration for me is because he showed what he made of when no one was watching, just like Prabhupada. So my question is that it's actually, what are some steps we could take to gain the realization that it's actually a blessing when we're put into either association, hardly any association, or association that gets on our nerves? Because actually we can't really test whether we're surrounded by principles unless people get on our nerves. So what are some steps we could gain a realization that it's actually a great blessing when Prabhupada leaves the planet, or the source of my inspiration leave this world? Then I can actually surround myself with principles, because just simply surrounding myself with my Dikshaguru or Shikshagurus is not an indication I'm following his teachings. So what are some steps we could take to see this as a blessing when we're surrounded by no one or people who get on our nerve?
I don't know. I'm not experienced enough in bhakti to answer that. I'm struggling with it myself. I hope you get some answers. Anyone else? All right. Shriman Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Shri Kishore Kishori ki jai. Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani ki jai. Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai. Shri the Prabhupada ki jai. Vaishnav Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.